I think the problem also is the fact that we're putting this on Jones. Who does he have around him? At the end of the day, it has to come from the heart. I might be a hippie for saying this, but I think 5 grams of mushrooms will set John free. And with that, welcome to Really Stopping the Show, where the news and days usually give us some time, sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you. And get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin. I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
Let's get into it. Who's this other guy in the show? What? Do we do this show every week? 2022. Let's get into it. It's the end of January. It's time to get into Early Stoppage. And like, if this is the first time that you've checked out this show, it's unlike anything else on Fight Night Picks. I wear Pirates jerseys. Maybe we color coordinated the black and yellow. Maybe we're both Wiz Khalifa guys. Why not North Dakota's own? But hey, I'm excited to be back. We got a lot to talk about. It's an exciting time to be an MMA fan. And next week, no UFC fights. So maybe this will kind of tie over.
I think so, yeah. And listen, if you guys are wondering where I've been, go to the Patreon. Craig, on this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Chael in the Streets, the next big star in UFC and the WEC belt. We begin with Francis Ngannou. Craig, there's no love lost between the UFC and Ngannou coming into the title unification bout this weekend with interim champion Ciryl Gane. Ngannou has said in no uncertain terms he wants a raise and he wants, quote, boxing options. Don't we all? Craig, this is a stare down the likes of which we haven't seen in some time. First, who wins? And second, who is in a better position to survive should they lose?
Ciryl Gane is in a better position with the UFC if he loses. I mean, if you look at it today, and we're going to talk about it, but it was just announced, the fight between Alexander Volkov and Tom Aspinall. Exciting fight between a veteran and a prospect, right? If Tom Aspinall loses that fight, he's still in a good position with the UFC. But if you have a guy in Volkov that loses this far into his UFC career, up near the top, you're not really fighting those top names again. We've seen Derek Lewis kind of vault back into the conversation before. Who's to say that Volkov can't? Maybe not me, but if I look at it as a prospect loses a fight, it's not the worst thing in the world. If Gane loses at 10-0, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. 10-1, you're still a pretty good prospect in my book. So if Ngannou loses, he loses all the stock that he has with the UFC. He loses any bargaining power, like any major bargaining power that he has with a Bellator, with a PFL, with even a one championship, if that were to materialize. And then at the same time, you look at it from a boxing perspective. If you had Francis Ngannou wanting to get into boxing, I'm going to spit 3 different things at you. Would you go with Eddie Hearn? Would you go with Bob Arum? Or would you go with Zuffa Boxing? Is that still a thing?
You know, if it were me, I'd go with Eddie Hearn. Because I think Eddie Hearn's the guy that gets the, if I'm not mistaken, gets the Tyson Fury fight done. So, I'd go with Eddie Hearn. I happen to like Eddie Hearn. I think he's a cocky guy, but I can deal with cocky guys. Listen, usually Craig and I are like
Flip that Nash. One for the Patreon.
Usually Craig and I are like Nash and Stoudemire with our chemistry. This week we're like, I don't know what we're like. We're not like Steve Nash and Amari Stoudemire. The question, Craig, is who wins in the fight between the UFC and Ngannou? And who is in a better position to survive should they lose that fight? I think UFC is going to win the battle, but I don't know if that means they win the war. Meaning, do they lose out on Francis Ngannou? In losing out on Francis Ngannou, meaning Ngannou wins this fight and then leaves, right? Because it's the last fight of his contract. He can then go and start to take advantage of some of the celebrity boxing. He'd be the only guy in, quote, celebrity boxing or, quote, circus fights who's a reigning champion despite leaving the promotion and is in his prime. So I think that he's a guy who opens up a lot of things, right? So in the past, you had to bring a certain cachet to the table to get a fight with Tyson Fury. Leaving the UFC as the champion might be all you need in the world that we live in now. They wouldn't need tune-up fights and this and that. That's a promotable fight. Tyson Fury, the undisputed heavyweight champion of boxing, versus Francis Ngannou, the undisputed heavyweight champion of MMA. That is a huge fight. So I will just say this. The UFC typically does things on their terms, but they need to tread lightly with this one. And honestly, I would wait till the fight before I would come to any kind of resolution with a contract.
I mean, that's the thing. Like, I look at all of this, and right before we came on to do the show, we're Thursday night, we're late. It was after the press conference for 270. I don't know if you watched any of it. I just caught like the tail end of it, and then I kind of skipped back through and watched a few minutes. You go over onto social media, and everybody's saying this is one of the weirdest press conferences they've ever seen. And it's kind of an odd one, too. And I mean, it's not to dampen the pay-per-view by any means, but you got Francis Ngannou, whose first language is in English. It's French. You've got Ciryl Gane, whose first language is French. Brandon Moreno's first language is Spanish. And Deiveson Figueiredo's first language is Portuguese. So you have all these different mixes. It makes for an awesome fight. It makes for an awesome way to promote. You get a good global push and so on and so forth. It makes for a really awkward pay-per-view. You've got these non-MMA media superstars that show up with bright pink suits that try and get loud and bombastic and kind of make their own impression. But the minutes that I watched out of this were really weird. Like, Francis Ngannou kept talking about knocking out Ciryl Gane and sparring, and that's cool, right? But in the same breath, he's like, I train with the lightweights. I train with the women at the gym. Nobody has any problems with me training in the gym at Extreme Couture. But then we had these big issues when I was training at MMA Factory. And I look at this whole fight week as just being an odd one because, to me, it's been, you know, UFC fight week, Fernan Lopez, and everybody seems to care what he says. If I'm Ciryl Gane, I'm probably saying, listen, slow your roll, man. When the coach becomes more than the fighter, you don't want to be there. And I'm surprised they haven't kind of dampened him a little bit this week.
True. Yeah, I've heard a little. I thought I saw something come out where he says it's not about me, it's about Ciryl. But, I mean, listen, man, practice what you preach. It's easy to say. It's clearly not as easy to do.
All right, well, we'll move on. And listen, we're at UFC 270 this weekend, but 40 pay-per-views ago in 2018, Nate Diaz was supposed to step in the cage to take on Dustin Poirier. And Poirier was just coming off a huge second-round finish over Eddie Alvarez. And then if you really look at it, he bounced due to a hip injury. And then ultimately, he ended up in a fight at lightweight against Max Holloway. And he won the interim championship, and the rest is history. And Nate Diaz would fight a year later against Anthony Pettis. Who can forget that? So now it's Nate Diaz that wants the fight. And you heard the quote in the intro that John decided to scrap. But basically, Nate Diaz is ready to fight, and he's cursing and swearing on Twitter. So listen, John, this is Nate Diaz's last fight on his contract. Is it either going to be a fight against Dustin Poirier, or will the UFC match him up against Conor McGregor this summer?
You know, the longer this thing goes on, I always feel like I've thought for a long time, the third time Conor and Nate Diaz fight, it's not going to be in the UFC. They're going to promote it themselves. They're going to be in their
Eagle FC.
They're going to be close to 40. Eagle FC. It's going to be I don't think it's going to be a UFC promoted fight because they just can't seem to figure out when the best time for these two guys to fight is. Listen, I'm an old guy, so I do old guy sayings. Here's an old guy saying for you: a watched pot never boils. I feel like the more we pay attention to Nate Diaz, nothing happens. The minute we stop paying attention to him, a fight's booked. So it's like, I think the next fight's going to be with Poirier. Although if I'm Dustin Poirier, it seems like I have way more to lose than gain on a fight with Diaz. I mean, I think that he should stay around. Now, I say that, but when he took the rematch with Conor, that did better. That was, remember we talked about, should he take the third fight with Conor or should he go for the belt? Everybody said the belt. He said the Conor fight, and it ended up working out for him, right? Then he gets the title fight, loses. Now we're like, you know, try and angle for a rematch or, you know, stay in that top five. And, you know, but he sees you leaning towards Diaz. I got to trust the guy. I mean, he was right about the Conor fight.
Well, I mean, I look at it. There was an interview with ESPN, Dana White sitting down, and the quotable there is, "Of course we're interested," in brackets, "in that fight," White said. "This is what we do. We make fights every weekend. What happens is guys just want to jump out of nowhere. I want to do this. I want to do that. We have fights booked all the way to, I want to say, May 2nd. Everything is in place. Everything is done. Obviously, Nate Diaz will get a fight." And then he goes on to talk about Conor McGregor, and maybe they make that fight and whatever. I see fights booked every day. Again, I opened the show saying they just announced Tom Aspinall is going to fight Alexander Volkov. Tom Aspinall was supposed to fight, who was it, Shamil Durakhimov, who they just rebooked with Sergey Pavlovich for that same card. So, yeah, they've got fights booked, but they can definitely still make a fight like that. And when I look at it, too, obviously a third fight between McGregor and Diaz would headline a pay-per-view. And obviously a fight against Dustin Poirier would headline a pay-per-view. UFC 277 is coming up. That's headlined by two guys that are not champions. Well, one's a BMF champion and they hate each other. But I think that you could go with either one. But as a last fight on a deal, I would think Nate Diaz is going to be one of those guys that you can still bring in on a one fight, two fight, you know, type of an agreement. So I'd be fine with the Dustin Poirier fight in the interim if Conor McGregor can't step in.
Craig, we move on. On the last episode of Early Stoppage, which I believe was 2 years ago, we talked about the odds that MMA GOAT was on the move, that being John Jones. Well, now we have confirmation that one is for sure on the move. Amanda Nunes is leaving American Top Team to start her own gym. Interesting tweet from Alex. I'm going to butcher your last name, Bahuen. He tweeted, interesting tidbit for anyone that didn't know. Amanda Nunes left MMA Masters when she lost to Kat Zingano, and she joined ATT. She finally lost at ATT and is now leaving to start her own gym. So, Craig, do you think Mr. Bahuen, do you think he was just came across a nice little interesting tidbit? Do you think there's something to the fact that she's leaving because she lost? I thought it was related to Kayla Harrison potentially coming to UFC, but it seems like she's headed back to the PFL. So what gives? Why do you think the Lioness is on the move?
I mean, maybe a change of scenery. You've seen some ATT fighters leave the gym, right? Like, Jillian Robertson's one that left and kind of went off, broke off with Dean Thomas, trains at Gamblers Jiu-Jitsu. Like, there have been some fighters that have left the gym, found some success here and there. I wonder if that might be the move. Maybe have, like, a Dean Thomas or another coach that's Florida adjacent that she can train with. And if she's going to open her own gym, it's one of those things. I mean, a double champ like that, I think that's probably going to be a pretty lucrative business. Maybe you turn it into an MMA and fitness. Those gyms are pretty popular, right? Like Glory, very popular. So I definitely understand it from that perspective. Seems like a little bit of a retirement nugget, if anything. But yeah, I mean, if she's going to make the move, who goes with her? I heard Brian Campbell, Luke Thomas talking on Morning Combat, the fact that maybe Conan Silvera makes the move. Conan Silvera, a guy who, when I went to see UFC Halifax as a fan in 2017, I'm walking through Mountain Equipment Co-op and everybody went, hey, that guy's a UFC coach, right? And we couldn't figure out who it was because we were young and naive and weren't like finger on the pulse at the time. But Conan Silvera, Mountain Equipment Co-op guy. Love that store. But when I look at this one, yeah, I mean, again, retirement nugget. I'm just interested to see who moves on with her. Obviously, Nina Nunes will, but who else? Because you need to have, like, live bodies in the gym. And, yeah, you can pay to fly people in, but it definitely pays to have some successful, notable stars training there full time.
Well, I'll take two approaches in addressing this topic. The first being, let's talk to the one that took her belt, Juliana, or let's talk about the one that took her belt, Juliana Pena. She says, when asked about this, she goes, yeah, what a zoo, huh? Best of luck, you know. I just hope everything goes according to her plans and that we get our fight booked. That's all I care about. So on the one hand, what a zoo. She's right. I mean, it seems like friends feuding. They're just trying to bring so many people in there and make it such this super gym that you just have a lot of stuff going on. Now, is that a byproduct of there being so many fighters there, so many high-level fighters, so many egos? Potentially. Or could it be that, you know, it's the inmates are running the asylum? Potentially as well. Now let's take the other approach to looking at this, which would be maybe she's just trying to do what, you know, Henry Cejudo has done. You know, Henry Cejudo has fight ready. Guys come in. Is she trying to say, is it kind of like when you see someone leave a website and start their own YouTube channel? Meaning, why am I creating all this content for someone else to benefit off of when I can benefit off of myself? Is she reached a point where she's like saying, okay, well, now I need to start figuring out, maybe I'm not ready to retire. Maybe I'm like 2-3 fights from retirement and I need to have something that's mine post-retirement. She opens a gym and now she creates her own thing like Cejudo has. Cejudo can be retired and just have fight ready.
Yeah, but so fight ready was already a thing with Santino DeFranco and Eddie Cha and everybody, right? And then Henry Cejudo just kind of inserted himself there. It's like Glory MMA and fitness was a thing. James Krause happens to be a coach there, but really kind of ups that public profile. So if it was Amanda Nunes, like, what? Think of a smaller gym. Like, I guess Jim O has John Salter. Like, there's gyms like that, right? That aren't huge marquee names, but you add somebody like Amanda Nunes and all of a sudden it gets really exciting. So I don't know. I mean, it really is a tricky one for me. I still think it's like a nest egg, but you seem to be on the hunt for something.
No, yeah, I'm not on the hunt for it, but like there's a lot of, you know, when there's smoke, there's fires. There's a lot that goes on at ATT, and it could just be personalities, or it could be the beginnings of the crumbling of a gym.
We'll flip it on over because we'll talk somebody ATT adjacent, John. 170 pounds is en fuego. Covington Masvidal is going to headline UFC 272 without a belt on the line. Listen, if you read between the lines, you've got Mr. Edwards, Rocky Edwards, taking on Kamaru Usman next for the title, and Vicente Luque somewhere between all of it. And so my main question, end of 2022, is Kamaru Usman still your champ at welterweight?
Here's another quote for you. Everybody's a gangster till a gangster walks in the room, right? Here's my question. Are all these guys just biding time until Khamzat Chimaev makes his ascension and gets into that top five? Because, listen, once Usman clears out this division, and let's be honest, Leon Edwards is clearing out the division. Once he beats Leon Edwards, the division is cleared out. They fought before, so you can make an argument he's already cleared it out, but this is a different Leon Edwards than he fought him before. So the question is, once he clears it out, all he's doing is legacy building, right? In the same way that GSP said, all right, I knocked them all down. Let's start over again. I'll knock them all down again. Fine, re-rack it, and I'll knock them all down again. Because if the Covington-Masvidal fight means nothing to the title shot, because he's beat both of them pretty handily. If he beats Edwards, there's some other guys in that division that show some promise, but it's really the Chimaev show. So do you think that any of this matters? Do you think that Usman won't really be tested until Chimaev is the one testing him? What do you see here?
I think Luque is a good test. I think Edwards is a good test. I definitely favor Usman in all of the fights, but I want to see that fresh challenge, like that hotness that is Khamzat Chimaev. Obviously, he was MMA boogeyman in the thumbnail at the end of 2021, I think. Was that like the last show? Was that one of the last shows?
It was a while ago. Yeah,
you know? But when I look at it, yeah, I think that's one of those fights. He could be the next Johnny Hendricks, right? Like, he really could be. So, hey, Khamzat, Johnny 2.0, just ease off on the stakes and the IVs, and that's it. But I look at Khamzat. Dana White's saying, listen, we have fights booked up until May 2nd. Khamzat doesn't have a dance partner yet. So when are we going to get a fight? This summer? Is that it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess my question, the question you asked, and I'll answer it because that's, you know, if we don't adhere to the rules and the structure of our show, we'll be like American Top Team. It'll be a damn zoo around here. And we can't have Juliana Pena saying that because she's a huge fan. Shouts to you, Juliana. I think he's still the champ at the end of 2022, but, you know, I think that everybody needs that guy, right? Like, Stipe had to find everybody. Every Muhammad Ali has to find his Joe Frazier, right? Daniel Cormier was two Joe Fraziers. He was John Jones's Joe Frazier, and he was Stipe Miocic's Joe Frazier. So I don't know. The closest thing Kamaru Usman's had to Joe Frazier so far has been Colby Covington. Chimaev could be that. So I happen to think that Usman keeps it for 2022, but if not the first quarter of 2023, those two are booked. If everything stays according to plans, and that's when Usman really gets tested. You know, if he starts doing the thing where he's like, you know, starts Ronda Rousey-ing it and starts just becomes like too cool for everything and he's running through everybody and things can't be beat, I could see Chimaev really, you know, putting him on his ass and making him reevaluate his career.
Agreed. Agreed.
All right, Craig, it's the same old song and dance at 135. Piotr Jan calls out Sterling. Sterling's on some soapbox about MMA. This time it's steroid abusers being criminally charged. And Henry Cejudo's using it all to chase clout. So what's the deal with this division? Is it ever going to get its shit together? Or much like Chimaev, is 135 just waiting for Sugar Sean to come around and save it?
Is he going to keep calling out unranked guys and calling himself the unranked champ and then going on B. Shouse's show when he gets J. Balvin Air Jordan 1s? I mean, hey, B. Shouse, those are cool. But do you have Air Jordans with Carlos Newton's face on them? I don't think you do, pal. Fight Night pick shoes. Hey, crazy stuff, right? Matt hates when I dig out the props, but they're there for a reason. Listen, when I look at the division, I mean, it's so much fun. There's so many great fighters. I mean, hell, Ricky Simone just had an amazing last fight over to Sunsal. Like, Brian Kelleher just had a really good fight against Kevin Kroom. And then Said Yakub Kakrakmanov wants that fight back again. Like, hey, we're already into 2022 after two cards. One card, and now we're into our second. And I couldn't be more excited about the bantamweight division. I mean, Aljamain Sterling, to take it for what it's worth, I agree with him. You know, you can't be abusing the PEDs and fighting an MMA. It really is different than hitting a baseball, shooting a basketball, whatever. But when we look at this division, I think it's just going to be a revolving door. I don't think you really have a cemented top champ that's going to gain the respect that they deserve just based off the level of talent that we have here. I think Piotr Jan's one of those guys that could be a Jose Aldo. We obviously saw what he did against Jose Aldo, but I think he could be a Jose Aldo, just continue to rinse and repeat and beat all challengers. I mean, we saw, listen, the one loss that he had against Magomedov, and when they rematched, he went ham. Now, obviously, he has a loss against Sterling. We got to see that fight again. But to me, I think Jan could be at the top for a long time, but I could definitely understand the revolving door, kind of like at 155, Edgar, Henderson, Pettis, RDA, Alvarez, McGregor. Like, it could go that way too.
Yeah, I'm just struggling to see stars, you know, and that's one of the things that makes this show great, our show, is that you're a guy that understands the, you know, the depth and who's coming, and I'm the guy that's looking for stars. You know, the joke that we've had forever is I'm half a casual. And so when I look at the rankings, you know, I see, you know, Jan could be a star. Maybe Sterling has some things that make him fun, but it's a lot of age. You know, Dillashaw, Aldo, Sandhagen, Sonhagen. He's you know, he's no star. Rob Font. There's Dvalishvili. I'm just not seeing. I don't see the thing that keeps this division relevant. I don't see the thing that keeps. I mean, really, honestly, are you more interested in 135 than you are 125? I look at 125.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
I love all the divisions equally, except for heavyweight. Because, listen, there's the parity at heavyweight's ridiculous. But 125, 135 are really exciting. But the bottom half of 135, where everybody's knocking on the door, compared to 125, where the bottom half, like Tagir Ulanbekov, yeah, he's fun, but when you watch his fights, does he really win those fights? Like, that's really the thing. At 135, so many great fighters, so many great unranked fighters. And the other thing that I have to say about the age, I sent a tweet out there today because we're not going to talk about it for the rest of the show. So I'll talk about it now. Paddy Pimblett yesterday, Dana White came out and said, he's going to fight Jared Gordon. And the internet went mild. And then today, the news is, nope, the belt wasn't actually signed. He's going to fight Kazula Vargas. And then everybody went, oh, okay, who's that? He's 1-2 in the UFC. That guy, really? Here's the thing. Paddy Pimblett's 27, 28, 27. He's 27. 17-3 in MMA. So is he a prospect age-wise, fight-wise? No, he's not a prospect. But why bother rushing him when you look at every UFC male champion and realize that only one of them right now, and that includes Sterling, one of them is under 30. And it's Brandon Moreno.
Yeah, I'm wondering if what Sean O'Malley's doing, and we'll get to that later, is sort of what the UFC is getting more comfortable with. Of, like, why rush these guys? You know, in the past, they were like, okay, we got a guy that could be a star. Let's make him a star as fast as we possibly can. Now, it's almost like a wait and see. Like, let's just see if this thing happens organically. And let them be a star. Without the thing that I think is interesting, and this might be a larger conversation, is determining if you're a fighter. We've asked this before, but it's a fair question to revisit. If you're a fighter, is it better to be a champion or a star? And I think a lot of these guys are realizing that I can be a star without being a champion. And, you know, listen, here comes our first jail reference. The next one will come later in a not as fun story. But, you know, you fight the easiest guy for the most money. That's what Chael says. You fight the easiest guy for the most money. And Sean O'Malley's doing that.
John, Scott Coker's kind of like that old OMC song. Making moves and starting grooves before they knew we were gone. Jumped into the Chevy, headed for big lights. Want to know the rest? Hey, by the rights. How bizarre. Speaking of Mike Bond of MMA Junkie, he offered Jake Paul a shot if he were willing to get into MMA, but he also acknowledged the fact that Jake Paul's talked about wanting 10 boxing fights before he puts on the 4-ounce gloves. So for Jake Paul, it'd be a smart move, like it kind of halfway was for another Jake, like Jake Hager, or would it be a better idea than instead of going over to Bellator, do like a Golden Boy idea where you just make up your own promotion and sign your own fighters?
You know, that makes sense. But I think that for me, when I look at Jake Paul, it's, you know, he's really following the Floyd Mayweather model, which is I fight guys when I want to fight them under the conditions that I want to fight them under. And I will admit, I do think that, you know, it came out this week that Tyron Woodley said, you know, he went on the MMA Hour and said, listen, you know, the fight wasn't fixed. Or he said something like, yeah, the fight was fixed. I took a dive because he hit me with some shit. So, but I thought taking that rematch the way he took it after Fury had pulled out and on short notice wasn't smart. I thought that was the first time Jake Paul made a bad decision. But from Jake Paul's perspective, he's like, I already beat this guy. I know how to fight him. I was going to fight him again anyway. And not only am I taking the fight on short notice, he is too. So maybe he was gambling that, or he was saying, well, okay, if I stay in shape all the time and he doesn't, then I'm, you know, taking a short notice fight benefits me. So my point in saying all that is I don't see any reason or any upside for him to get involved in Bellator. As a matter of fact, I don't see any reason for him to get involved in MMA at all. If I was Jake Paul, I would take a kickboxing fight before I would take an MMA fight. Like, what good is that going to do? What does he need to do? What does he have? And listen, I don't know if this kid, like, wrestled in high school or whatever. I don't know anything like that. From what I understand, he only played football. I see no upside to this kid getting an MMA fight. I think that he would get wiped out quickly. And what would be the point?
Yeah, but I mean, he's AK adjacent. He's got the Daniel Cormier-Habib connection. Everything about this would be great for Bellator. They throw a chunk of change at this kid and they cash out as it goes. I mean, look at their YouTube channel right now. They're still bumping Eddie Alvarez and Michael Chandler. Hell of a fight. Great fights. But still, they're still going back for the greatest hits. But when I look at this one, John, yeah, I think a Golden Boy thing makes a lot more sense. I mean, Jake Paul is really pushing Amanda Serrano right now in boxing, which I think is awesome. But he's been an advocate for fighter pay. So maybe you have your own card and you publicize your purses. And man, you would really win over another giant swath of fans. You're going to get them involved in your boxing. You're going to get them involved in your MMA. And as long as you do everything, you know, in a very professional manner, I think you get a lot more people on board. So I think that Jake Paul's doing it the right way. And you kind of mentioned Floyd Mayweather, but remember that time his brother fought him? Wild, right? Wild. That happened in real life.
I think I've asked you this before, but I want to revisit it because of this topic. How would you feel about Aaron Pico fighting Jake Paul? Now, there's a size difference there, okay? But it's no different. So Aaron Pico is 5'8", fights at 145 pounds. Jake Paul is 6'1", fights 185. All right? 185, he fought Tyron Woodley. Tyron Woodley fights. I don't know what they're sanctioned for in these fights. But if Jake Paul and Aaron Pico fought at 170.
In MMA or in boxing?
In boxing.
Oh, yeah, not a
chance. Co-promoted with Bellator.
No, Jake Paul.
Aaron Pico's
a
golden gold gloves guy, isn't he?
Yeah. Remember what happened when he fought Henry Corrales?
Yeah, but that was, you know, I got you.
All right. Lockhart Boxing, though, right? Hey, yeah, well, there's a connection there.
There you go. It was all just an opportunity to get wild card mentioned. All right, Craig, we move on to sparring sessions. Craig, this week, it's a very simple question. It's one that you've been avoiding forever because you just can't give credit where credit is due. I have seen a lot of promotion lately of Juliana Pena. She was on, I think she was on Ellen.
She was on Bulls game.
She's at Disney World right now. I follow her on Instagram. So I don't know if I'm just seeing her stuff on Instagram or if it's like, you know, stuff through the UFC or whatever. But my question to you is, do you think Juliana, let me ask it in two ways. One, do you think Juliana Pena has the potential to be the UFC's next big star? And how brilliant was calling out Ronda Rousey?
Listen, I think I have a decent answer to this analytically. Everybody loves that. But this is an old throwback to a show that you and I used to be on, me more so than you. It's still with another network, and neither one of us have been featured on it since. But the craziest part about it is right now, if you go on Google Trends, and I go, it's the start of January, because the fight that Nunes had against Juliana Pena was what? End of December? Middle of December?
Yeah.
Middle of December. So January 2nd to the 8th. Ronda Rousey is more searched than Amanda Nunes, is more searched than Juliana Pena, is more searched than Valentina Shevchenko. January 16th to the 22nd, it's Rousey, Nunes, Pena, Shevchenko. Do I think Juliana Pena is the next star? I think Juliana Pena has a shot, but I think the current champ at featherweight that doesn't have a division, the current champ at flyweight that's beaten everybody, and a person that doesn't even fight anymore, let alone, I assume, wrestle, are all ranked ahead of her in the search rankings. And that's worldwide. I've got it searched over the past 12 months. The two big blips, there's a few of them. Nunes, when she won in the spring, you get Shevchenko on her two fights. And then, of course, you have that fight in December. That's really the biggest bump. And even on that night, more people were searching Nunes, probably because they were surprised that she lost and assumed she would win like I did. And then you have Pena, who John Franklin has been saying really deserved that title shot. Thought she was going to win female fighter of the year 2021 for John Franklin.
All of it.
I don't know. I mean,
listen, can I ask you a weird question? Because you're a Google guy. Are you
biggest upset ever? I don't think so.
No.
But yeah.
Can I ask you a question? This is going to sound like a weird one, but maybe you have an answer for it.
Hit me up.
Because I'm so disconnected from this world. Why the hell in December of 2021 or January of 2022, or November of 2021 for that matter, or February of 2022, why the hell would you be searching Ronda Rousey? What could she – and I know the short answer is she's a star. And stars get – you know, she might have a huge Instagram following. I'm so disconnected from the content that Ronda Rousey does outside of MMA, right? Like, I don't know anything about what she's doing in WWE anymore. She's doing that. I don't know if she's having a kid. I don't know if her and Travis Brown have a reality show. I know nothing. So my question is, why the hell would you be searching Ronda Rousey in the last 4 months or in the next 4 months?
I'll read you some headlines. So UFC champ Juliana Pena on Ronda Rousey. We're not friends, from the New York Post a week ago. The Mirror. Ronda Rousey called out of retirement by UFC champion Juliana Pena. BJPenn.com. BJPenn.com. Juliana Pena has a score to settle with Ronda Rousey, reveals what Rowdy told her after winning Tough Sport Bible. UFC legend Ronda Rousey is the only woman to make 20 richest MMA fighters in world in 2022. Another Juliana Pena one. And then if I go down to Inside the Ropes, 3 weeks ago, Ronda Rousey congratulates Natalia on latest record, dot, dot, dot. And if I go back a little bit further, the next one, Inside the Ropes, current WWE superstar in Ronda Rousey. And then the little blurb. Ronda Rousey's WWE career may have only lasted a year, but what a run it was. Could not tell you, other than the fact that she's a giant superstar. And a lot of people, you know, seem to like her in the UFC and professional wrestling. But I don't know. I don't know. I'm not the person to ask, I guess. I'm just a guy with a Pirates jersey. Big Jason Bay fan. That's all we got.
Listen, I'm with you. I just think that... let's get back to the crux of the question, which is Pena. Do you think she's dependent on a – I'll ask it a different way. I'll ask it MMA-wise. Is she an A-side? Could she ever be an A-side? Or is she always going to be dependent on the person across the cage from her?
Stars will call out stars. But if you're a real star, you attract everybody else. And right now, all those news blurbs that I read is all – like, there's another one, MMA news. Pena responds to Ronda Rousey wannabe, Harrison. Like, yeah, if Kayla Harrison's talking about you, great, but she's not a UFC fighter. So for me, it takes everybody in that division to start calling out Juliana Pena. I haven't really heard Holly Holm, Irene Aldana, like Carol Hosa. I haven't really heard them calling her out. So it's a weird spot for me. I don't think you're going to see her main eventing a big UFC card, personally.
I think it's tricky. I think that when you're someone like Juliana Pena and you've been on the hunt for so long, it's hard to then be hunted. But sometimes what you said, what you have to do is you have to give time. You get the belt, you chill out. You know, the problem is typically if you don't start making moves, moves get made for you. And I think that she's like, well, damn, I got to give this girl an immediate rematch. But, you know, maybe there's a way that she can curve that. So we'll see.
All right, John, we move into our featured segment of the week. This is my favorite part of the week. And if I had a Luis Smolka quotable, I'll insert it here. But yeah, it's a spicy one. So, John, it's called Hitting the Speed Bag. I have five rapid fire questions. They're a little bit wordy, but the timer doesn't start until I finish the first question, which is the wordiest. John, are you ready? You have no idea what these questions will be.
None. Go ahead.
That's the best part.
I'm never ready. Well, go ahead.
There's no hidden camera behind the fourth wall. John has no idea what these are. All right. And I start the timer after the first question. Heavyweights are all the rage these days, with Aspinall Volkov the main event at the UFC's return to London and Jake Collier submitting Chase Sherman in last weekend's co-main event. You've been around the block. If you could pair a heavyweight from yesterday with one from today in a fight tomorrow, who would they be?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. Let me just make sure that I'm taking a look at current heavyweights, because the old heavyweights I got for sure. But let me see. You know what? I'll keep it really easy. I would like to see prime pre-diverticulitis Brock Lesnar against Stipe.
Give me Krokop and Ngannou. Everyone's going to your neck of the woods to train. Yuri Prochazka's on his way with Cejudo, the ringleader. If you could train somewhere other than Phoenix, where would it be?
Probably California. Probably Black House. Pedneris. I've been past that gym. It's a cool area. Yeah, probably where I train.
Masvidal versus Covington is official for the main event of UFC 272, WWE style.
Who would you like to see in there? I apologize. Ooh. I apologize. I'm so sorry. I apologize. Big Bear. I would want to train at Big Bear.
De La Hoya's sitting
there. He sold it to Tito Ortiz. I just like the idea that you're training at altitude. It's a cabin. You can kind of get Big Bear. But go ahead. Sorry.
Masvidal Covington, UFC 272, WWE style. Who would you like to see in their corner as managers?
Ooh, that's a good one. For Covington, I think that I would like to see Paul Heyman. And for Masvidal, I think that I would like to see Bobby Heenan.
The Brain.
Bobby the Brain Heenan, yeah.
The r/MMA awards were revealed this week as voted by the fans. And the promotion of the year 1-5 went, and this is the order, UFC, ONE Championship number 2, Ryzen, PFL, KSW. What are your top five in order?
My top five would be, UFC. Well, it would be Bellator, of course, because, you know, listen, I like what Bellator's doing. So I'm going to stick with, you know, I'm going to go chalk. I'm going to go UFC, Bellator, PFL. I'm not really interested in ONE Horizon, but I guess I'll finish it out with those two. What am I missing? Eagle FC.
Eagle FC, I mean, they just signed Impa Kasanganai. Exciting stuff. Go. So Bellator didn't make that list from r/MMA, and it was a surprise to a lot of people. So what's one thing from each of the top five promotions that Bellator could do to boost their game?
Well, they could take bigger stars from the UFC. They could do the weight thing that ONE does. They could obviously have a larger presence in Asia like Ryzen does. And what were the other KSW?
PFL and KSW.
I think that Bellator's always kind of flirted with these Grand Prix. Maybe they could take some of the stats stuff that I happen to think, as much as I do like what Bellator does, I do think the PFL has a pretty clean presentation. they have a pretty clean, like, you know, the cameras look good. The stats are pretty well interwoven. I like their presentation.
What about KSW?
No idea.
Oh, come on. Freak fights. I like Bellator freak fights.
Yeah, it's
KSW
true.
Freak fights. That's hitting the speed bag.
It certainly is. But the segment I dread the most. And we move on, Craig, to For the Gram. Craig, we talked about this a little bit earlier. Kevin Lee said this week that he's jealous of Sean O'Malley and that he's doing things the right way. One, do you think Lee's right? And two, do you think it's a blueprint Lee could have or maybe should have followed?
I mean, Lee kind of did some similar things, right? Like, he was a flashy dresser, talks well, but not was, he still is. Good on the mic, he still is. But Kevin Lee always let his performances against top athletes speak for him. That was always the calling card. And yeah, did he lose to Ally Quinta really early on? Sure. And did he lose to Tony Ferguson? Sure. And so on and so forth. But he was always fighting like top of mind guys. He wasn't like kind of, you know, it wasn't a slow build for Kevin Lee that I remember anyway. He was always like top of mind for everybody. And then when he lost to Daniel Rodriguez before he left the UFC, it was like, oh, man, well, that's kind of sad. So, you know, Kevin Lee's now at a point in his life where he's still a young enough guy, but he's kind of aged himself out of the UFC. I doubt, you know, with a good performance against Diego Sanchez, the UFC is going to want to sign him back, right? So for Kevin Lee, he's in a really difficult spot now. And if you look at it for Sean O'Malley and you talk about a blueprint, I guess Kevin Lee, maybe they could have given him an easier path to the top, really.
You know, listen, I have always been somebody not superly motivated by money. It's just not something I think about or I'm overly concerned with. I'm a teacher, for Christ's sake. So obviously that's not my motivation. But nowadays I'm starting to get a little bit more interested in investing and just kind of understanding it better and all that. So let's compare Sean O'Malley and Kevin Lee in that way. Kevin Lee to me is like a guy that's like an aggressive stock trader. So he tried to get in the cage with the biggest names that he could and just try to, you know, I'm going to put all my chips in, and if I win this fight, it skyrockets me. Sean O'Malley seems like somebody who's investing in real estate, and he just kind of says, okay, I'm going to buy this property with the understanding that if I just hold on to it long enough, it's going to increase in value. Now, I'm going to have to wait a while. I think Sean O'Malley is like, I'm in the UFC, and I have the biggest platform I could possibly have for everything. What is the rush? I have this thing, right? I bought this house at a low number. I'm going to keep the house forever. What's the rush in selling it? It's only going to go up, right? And you know, except for a few times in the United States when they've had these housing bubbles that burst, he would be right, right? Personally, I bought my house 10 years ago, and it's got a lot of equity in it because we've kept it for 10, where all my friends are selling this house, that works for them. I think that's the difference between the two. Kevin Lee was like, I'm just going to fight the biggest names I can. And in beating them, next thing you know, I'm fighting for the belt. And O'Malley just doesn't seem overly obsessed with that.
And I bought my house at the top of the bubble last year.
And we move on to one Twitter hitter. Craig, that's going to live in infamy. Chael Sonnen was involved in an altercation with the police, and you know, he's kind of had a little bit of run-in with some folks. You know, the details are sketchy. I haven't seen if Chael talked about it. All I ever saw was that Brendan Schaub talked about it. Some guys were, you know, saying some things to Chael's wife, and obviously there are consequences that come with talking to a guy like Chael's wife, and that's how it went down. Does this help Chael's legacy? Does it hurt Chael's legacy? I mean, he is the bad guy. Is this kind of on brand? Do you think it was a waste of time? Should he? Just give me 2 minutes on what your thoughts on Chael getting into this type of altercation is.
Weird, because all the news kind of comes out, and then he still has videos that are coming out, and then they're just getting mobbed by people talking about it, but they don't know anything about it. And that was what, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And we're here and we still don't know what happened. So it's all allegedly. You sprinkle your allegedlys in there. But when I look at it, I don't think personally, when I first saw the news, you think, oh, okay, this is going to negatively impact them. But I haven't seen any negativity about it. Have you?
No.
So that's it. Like, I don't really have a great take on it. It looks like it hasn't been a career ender. John Jones started to talk about him.
Yeah, I agree.
Which
I
is
mean,
probably not the
knew,
best thing.
Of course you knew John Jones was going to jump on it because of all the things Chael said about John Jones over time. You know, listen, I just think that to me, unless he does time or he has to pay a fine or he's, you know, whatever, if there's any kind of fallout legally to it, I think it does kind of bolster the bad guy reputation a little bit. Like, listen, I'm a guy that Chael's my age, right? He's 44. So he's like, listen, at 44, I still don't take any shit. You want to talk, you know, you want to talk some inappropriately to my wife? This is the repercussions. So I don't think there's anything really wrong with it. He did what he was supposed to do in that situation. Hopefully there's no legal fallout from it, but I thought it was interesting. He's our guy. We ride with him in good times. We got to ride with him in bad times. Chael, we salute you, brother. You support the house. All right, Craig, we're on to post of the book. It came out this week that Uriah Faber and Cub Swanson, I believe more Swanson than Faber, has some interest in resurrecting the WEC belt and putting it on the line for one night. So here's my question. Why do we take this shit so seriously, Craig, and why can't we do this? What I mean by take this shit so seriously, just MMA. I know it's not the WWE, but who cares? Listen, we got a BMF running around. Why can't we pull the belt out of...
Who's upset about this?
I don't think anybody's upset about it, but I don't know if they're taking it seriously.
You're a dork if you're upset about this. This is cool as fuck. Like, this is the stuff that gets me up in the morning. Because did you watch Cub Swanson's last fight against Darren Elkins? Did you watch any of the lead-up where Cub Swanson was working his boxing with top boxers over at Team Alpha Male? Did you see how good they... Or not Team Alpha Male. Where is he? Huntington Beach? Is that where he trains out of?
He's, where is he? He's Palm Springs, isn't he?
Wherever. Team Alpha Male was Darren Elkins. I goofed. But still, the point remains, Cub Swanson looked great. My excitement's overflowing. But I think, yeah, if you bring a belt out, it's great. It hypes it up. The one weird thing about this one to me is the fact that it seemed like they were talking about having to fight a bantamweight. I think that's an awful move for Cub Swanson. But for Uriah Faber, it would work out in his favor. So I'm all about the fight, but I'd rather see it at featherweight.
I think it'd be interesting. I mean, I think that if you're going to do these legends fights anyway, why not just make them, don't make them like random. Like say, hey, listen, there's a reason why we're doing this. Even if you want to make it an uncrowned situation, right? You tell in the promotion of this fight, you say, listen, these guys are WEC legends. Show the WEC footage. You know, maybe if you don't put the belt on the line because of whatever reason, show it and just, you know, bring it. I think that you have to find new ways to market this stuff. And I think that brings a level of interest to that fight that did not exist previously. It's not just two old washed up guys getting together. It's we're getting together for a reason. I don't know. I don't believe. Let me check very quickly if they fought before.
I'm looking at Cub Swanson.
He trains
with Rafa Garcia. Looks like he's training at Ruka Sport. I guess UFC gym. He's got Georgie Karhanian around him. They're training lab adjacent, guys.
Yeah, I don't think that they've ever... So they've never fought, but I think that there's some value in promoting this as, like, you know, two great WEC fighters who never fought, that kind of thing.
It's like, remember when Matt Brown fought Donald Cerrone? That was pretty cool.
Exactly.
Why can't we have Uriah Faber and Cub Swanson for an old belt? That's
there
cool.
Has to be a way to do it, yeah. All right, Craig, let's finish up. We'll start the conversation. Listen, I am interested in this UFC NFT business because and one thing we didn't mention earlier, which we should have, we were remiss in not mentioning this, is that Francis Ngannou is going to take half of his fighter pay in Bitcoin. And then there was some talk that he's maybe giving some of it away on his Instagram and his Twitter. Anyway, so we're talking Bitcoin, we're talking crypto, we're talking NFTs. The reason why they're all connected is that I guess there was an NFT of Francis Ngannou knocking out, the name escapes me, but that was just sold as an NFT. So anyway, the point of it is that the two fighters involved in the picture or involved in an NFT will get half of the proceeds from the sale of the NFT. The UFC will get the other half. So, couple of questions as we're starting the conversation. If you buy an NFT from the UFC or from basketball or anywhere for that matter. What exactly do you own? I mean, are they just turning this picture of him knocking someone out into a piece of art? Meaning, is the picture that the UFC owns any different than the picture that Esther Lynn owns? And Esther Lynn could make hers an NFT, and then we would just be determining who gets to, who sells for a higher price? What's the better picture? And does this in any way affect copyrights? Right? So if I own an NFT, does that mean that no one else can use that thing, or do I just own the art per se?
I'm going to not answer your question, and I'm going to answer it in a different way. So here goes. Fantastic. So I have furnished this office with things that I've collected over the years, the shoes, the books. I mean, hell, I've got a Christmas gift from last year from John Franklin sitting right there. Look at that.
Look at that.
Look at that. So I've got three examples in front of me that I can use to answer this question. I have a 2020 Striking Signatures autograph Mean Hakeem Dawodu card. I have another one, Jack Hermanson. Pretty cool, right? And then one of the videos for 15-minute card breaks, son of a gun, did I buy a $25 box of cards at Walmart, and I hit like a $300 or $400 Israel Adesanya.
Let me give you a quick scenario, and I'll see if it'll just change your mind a little bit. Because I'm trying to figure this out, how this benefits the UFC. Because there's a part of me that thinks that this NFT stuff is just, we're all going to give something value for a short period of time. And then when everybody realizes it has no value, then we will have sold it all off and gone on to something else.
Like a beanie baby.
Right. Like a beanie baby being example. Here's the world that where this might be different. Imagine a world where there's a metaverse.
No, right? Lord.
Hear me out. And in the metaverse, what you have in the metaverse has value. Like how much of the metaverse you're able to operate in has value. Now let's spin that forward to, if I'm in the metaverse and you're in the metaverse, and then when you go in there as an avatar, you want to go to my area of the metaverse. We'll call it Franklin Land. When you get there, all of the things that I own as NFTs are now available to you in the metaverse, but they wouldn't be available to you otherwise. For example, let's say the Wu-Tang Clan made an album and they only sold it to me, and the only place you can hear it is in my part of the metaverse, which I am charging you to get into. In that scenario, the NFT would have value. Or, right? I mean, can we agree on that? That if now if you're trying to get somewhere, you wouldn't be able to hear it anywhere else besides. So now let's spin it forward. Now House of Highlights has an area of metaverse. And the only place you can see the highlights, which are NFTs, is in their part of the metaverse. That's the only place where I see any of this having value. So, but the question becomes, now again, for people that don't collect baseball cards, the only reason why, or sports cards, the only reason why your sports cards have value is because someone has said they're valuable. So the money is what they respect, not the card, right? The person that's spending the money, the person that set the number, it respects the card. Right, Keith Olbermann's a huge memorabilia guy. If he says, I'll pay $3 million for a Paul O'Neill autograph rookie card, right? He's putting that value to it because he cares to have that card, right? Everybody else just cares about the money. He cares about the card. That's where I think this gets interesting. If everybody only cares about the money, the point at which no one cares about the thing anymore is when it goes away. Someone has to care about the thing. That's traditionally what sets the value.
I mean, this is a real headline on hypebeast.com. Don't knock it. Prada and Adidas leap further into the metaverse with user-generated NFT project. The NFT collab features user-generated and creator-owned art inspired by the physical Re-Nylon collection. If we're getting that deep into it, yeah. I mean,
well, listen, hey, I'm telling you, buddy. The reason why I know this. Okay, and listen, I'm not a deep end Gary V guy, but he did say this, and I do respect this statement. He said, "All the kids, all the young people now, exist in a world that means nothing to us. My son comes home every day from school, gets on his iPad, FaceTimes with his friends, and goes and plays Roblox. They go into Roblox, they go into these worlds, and all that has value. Roblox, for the most part, is free, right? Most of the things you can do in Roblox are free, but you can spend some money to build other things. So now imagine we live in the metaverse as adults, or these kids live in the metaverse as adults. And what you wear in the metaverse, your avatar, you have to purchase from Nike, right? Or you're just looking like some bum-ass guy in the metaverse. Your avatar looks like shit. Same as in Fortnite. In Fortnite, you're buying skins, right? I think that's what the foundation of all this is. Now, if people will care about that, you and I won't, right? But my kid who plays Roblox every day will. Because that whole generation of people are going to want to be in the metaverse because they want to be in Roblox and they want to be in Minecraft.
The most interesting part of this when it comes to the UFC is what type of fan does this appeal to, and how quickly will these sell? Like, let's say, I don't know, coming up at UFC 270, there's 100 exclusive NFTs that are going to drop. Who's going to buy them? Is it going to be investors? Is it going to be, you know, those, and they're everywhere. They're just right at the drop of the hat. There's a bot out there. Pick it up.
Yeah.
Flip it. Like, it's going to be interesting to see if it's going to be the true blue hardcore fans that follow the channel, follow on Reddit, you know, are up on the up and up on Twitter, the Underground Whisper Network. Or is it going to be just, yeah, investment people, really?
It's interesting. It's interesting because, you know, where, like, I know a lot of these guys, they're selling NFTs, and the NFT equals like admission into a club. Like, the NFT costs $275,000. And when you buy the NFT, now it's like you and Elon Musk and Mark Cuban and whoever are all, you know, the NFT comes with a code to get you into this club, right? But then it's like a country club, right? And now if all I got to do is spend $275,000 to get in, then it's like, well, now Logan Paul's in there. So now if you're Elon Musk, you're like, I don't want to be in this thing with Logan Paul. So anyway, that's where I think it gets interesting. How does the UFC market this? Or is it just a way to say, here's the thing that we have already in existence, let's try to monetize it? And we move on, Craig, to finish strong. You got Aspinall and Volkov and finish strong. I got Misha Tate criticizing fighters who have OnlyFans accounts. We're going to start with mine. What do you think about Misha here? Do you think that that she should have been a little more self-aware and read the room better and sort of said, okay, not everybody has the same opportunities I have. Not everybody had the career that I have. Not everybody has all this, you know, the follow-up job with one, and people actually need this. Like, maybe I shouldn't be shaming. It's like the old argument of, like, when women shame strippers or when women shame girls that work at Hooters. It's like, listen, not everybody went to a great school. Not everybody has the same opportunities. Do you think Misha was in the wrong here or no?
I mean, I remember us talking about something like this 2 years ago. Like, it was 2020. Macy Chasson came out against Valerie Lareda. And her Twitter, or TikTok, rather. And the quote is, LOL, I fucking can't anymore. Is this the message we want to continue to convey to not only our future leaders, but to the disgusting, already misogynistic dudes out here? Are we here to fight and be role models? Are we here, rather, for male followers and stripteases? Hashtag bring WMMA back. So, I mean, listen, there's always going to be a push and a pull here. Listen, you got to make a living any way you can, right? While you have the opportunity to do it. So I'm not going to shame anybody for, you know, trying to make money while they can.
Jay-Z has a line. I won't say the special word that white people are not supposed to say in it.
But please,
Jay-Z,
don't.
I won't. Jay-Z says, you can't knock the way up eating. Like, you can't knock the way somebody puts food on their table. And I think that you gotta look at that this way. I understand what she's trying to say, but listen, as a parent of kids, I have a son and a daughter. It's your job as a parent, and I know everybody doesn't have the situation that my kids do, but your job as a parent is to say, hey, this is one track of life and this is another, and you can choose to get on this track and here comes all the problems with it, or you go on this other one. So I don't think that it's the job of strippers or Hooters waitresses or OnlyFans girls or anybody to not exist because someone doesn't know how to handle it, because someone is, you know, doing whatever they're doing. All right, let's talk fights. Aspinall Volkov, what are your thoughts?
Please and thanks. Because it was supposed to be Asmal, Shamil, Dyrkhimov, and then there's Sergei Pavlovich in the mix. And now it's Dyrkhimov, Pavlovich. So Pavlovich ranked 15th, but he never fights. Dyrkhimov's ranked 8th. But John, Tom Aspinall's ranked 10th. He's going to fight the 5th ranked Alexander Volkov in a main event, UFC London. That's huge pressure. He hasn't had a fight like this. I mean, he mollywopped poor old Andrei Arlovsky. Like, he's been exciting in the UFC, Tom Aspinall. Is this just too much too soon, though, to go from 10 to 5, or is he on, like, that Cyril Gane track?
I don't know. I mean, when I see this kid, he looks legit. I mean, we've talked about it before. There's this, like, little, like, undercurrent, right, just below the surface of these heavyweights that could be something special. I think the guy's got the goods, and, I mean, you know, it's funny. When you're a heavyweight, we talk Derek Lewis, we talk Mark Hunt, we talk all these guys in the past where it's like, 1 minute you're up and you're down, and then somehow you stumble into a title shot, and then next thing you know you're fighting, you know, on the fight night cards. And it's the heavyweight is one of those divisions where it's like you're never gonna fall too far off a couple losses. I mean, Andrei Arlovsky's still fighting, for Christ's sakes. I mean, if I think that if that's happening, we could take a shot at some guys, especially if they're gonna lose Ngannou potentially, you know, at the end of his contract. I think that you gotta give these guys a shot to see what you have.
I mean, I look at it, right? Like, Cyril Gane's made it to the mountaintop undefeated, fighting for the title this weekend. And then Chris Daukaus was supposed to be the next guy. And he fights Derek Lewis and he gets knocked out pretty quick. So this is another one of those sink or swim moments. And for Volkov, his last fight was Cyril Gane. And he sunk. So now he's got to take on another prospect who's like a super prospect. And oh, by the way, you talk about Big Bear. You talk about Tyson Fury. Who is like the main training partner that has been along for the ride? It's Tom Aspinall. Like, Tom Aspinall get into boxing with Tyson Fury. They're buddies. Like, it's not just they've taken pictures on Instagram together before. Like, they're pals. So for me, I couldn't be more excited about it. You're going to get the rub in England from Tyson Fury on a fight like that. I couldn't be more excited. I think it's an amazing fight. It's one of those ones that like really gets me up in the morning. Like Ilya Topuria and Mavzar Evleev would have. But now we get my guy Charles Jourdain. So, hey, I couldn't be more excited about that fight. I think it's a great one.
I agree. There you have it, folks. Another one's in the books. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen F&P. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week, Craig. For once in your life, let's start this year off the right way. Craig, say something witty.
Get some books for your friends.
Get some books for your friends. That's a great one. Somebody should do an MMA version of that. All right, guys. We'll see you next week. Peace.